From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, and welcome back to the show. My name is Noel.
Our compatriot Matt is on adventures, but will be returning soon. They call me Ben. We are joined, as always, with our super producer, Paul Mission Control Deccant. Most importantly, you are here, and that makes this Stuff They Don't Want You to Know. It's the top of the week, which means it's time for our Strange News segment. Now, spoiler alert for anyone who is vaguely familiar with world news or news in the U.S., there have been a lot of strange things happening.
Afoot.
There's been I was going to say there's a lot of f***ery afoot. There have been a lot of strange things happening, some very inspiring, some very frightening. And today we're existing with those things. History is still not written, but we wanted to give you some stories that you might not have heard because the news is, to put it diplomatically, kind of occupied with some other stuff at the moment.
Yeah, it's one of those news cycles they talk about, the 24-hour ones. Only this one's been going on for what, like a week now? Over a week? It's definitely been a little more all-encompassing than one might think, an edge of seat-y, and now we're still at another phase where there's been, like, celebration on one side and consternation on the other side, but still things are up in the air, so we're kind of still in it. But you're right, Ben. Let's give a little respite from that vicious news cycle with some strange news stories of our own. Gosh, where do we even start? Shall we roll for it? Nominate who goes first? I'm completely indifferent.
Well, since we're talking about getting away from it all, Noel, why don't you do the honors if you're okay with it? Because this is a story that reminds, I covered a story like this earlier, and I had read the same thing. This feels like a good one. It feels interesting, and it'll be one for fans of some earlier topics we've discussed.
Yeah, I believe you might have been talking about the ghost ship tours, or rather the ghost cruise ship tours, where you could witness the empty cruise ships out in the harbor, right?
I mean, that's a great one. I'm specifically talking about earlier, I had done I think for Strange News Daily, I don't want to spoil it too much, but for a while during the pandemic, there was an airline company in Asia that would take you through, like, you could go to the TSA essentially for fun and then go sit on a plane.
You know, I heard a version of that story too, not to get too far away from this actual one that we're talking about today, but where I think we might be talking about two different things, but the version that I heard was a flight out of Taiwan that was, like, considered a sightseeing flight. So yeah, you definitely go through all the security and you do sit on the plane, but then you take a little trip around the block, as it were, sort of enjoy your own home turf from the air. Not the case with this one. Also out of Asia, this story, the headline says it all. Singapore introduces cruises to nowhere. That's a great tagline, the cruise to nowhere.
I think we've all felt that way at some point or another.
I think you're probably right. That's true. What is it? Like, it's a Talking head song, I'm on a road to nowhere. But it's a thing that's starting to, you know, become part of the new vernacular of, like, COVID-safe travel. Singapore has announced that it will do a pleasure cruise that won't actually dock anywhere or go into port anywhere. And that'll be starting this very month, November 2020. It is through the National Tourism Board of Singapore, and it's partnered with these two specific cruise lines for the whole, you know, venture. One of them is called Genting Cruise Lines World Dream, and then also Royal Caribbean International's Quantum of the Seas in one of the better ship naming situations that I've personally run across. But yeah, it's going to be a little bit of a different animal than what you might be used to. It's going to depart and return from the very same spot with no stops in between. Of course, you know, to stay in keeping with the ability to social distance, the ships will never be booked more than 50% capacity and are only allowing Singapore residents to board. There's a quote from Keith Tan, who's the CEO of the Singapore Tourism Board, where he says, "This cruise pilot is a valuable opportunity for cruise operators to reinvent the entire cruise experience in order to regain the confidence of passengers." That's interesting, Ben. I'd love to talk about that aspect with you. This is almost like, you know, cruises got such a bad rap early in the pandemic because there was that ship that had to dock in like Japan, I believe it was, for like weeks. You know, people were not able to leave, not able to go home. And it was a real, real big news story and certainly not a good look for the cruise industry in general. So this is almost like an experiment to try to get sort of the faith of the public back so that they can maybe say, hey, we're back and we figured out a way to make this not terrifying.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's I believe we were talking about the same flight there in Taiwan. I think you're correct that they were doing a sightseeing thing, but that's instructive because what they're doing with that flight is trying to reassure passengers that they have instituted safety measures, right? And and I think you're on the money that this is the primary goal for this seacation or this round trip in Singapore. This is something that I think is on the mind of a lot of people in the industry because just earlier this month, I believe, today, there's been some analysis coming out about the massive decline that cruise industry is facing. Like ticket sales or profits are down 94% and people are getting freaked out because this is such a big business. So anything they can do to convince people that it's safe to hop back on the high seas, they're obviously going to do it. And governments are helping a little. The CDC here in the U.S. just issued an order last week, I think, about resuming cruise ship operations in some kind of phased approach. Of course, the U.S. is still encountering record rates of COVID transmission, so we're going to be lagging behind Singapore. We've been talking a lot about cruise ships. Do you think it's like vicariously traveling because we're stuck here?
I guess so. I wonder what would it take for you to want to be a part of this like pilot program to be one of these kind of lab rats. It has to be someone that really is all about either the industry or just, I know people that really love cruises. I've never personally kind of understood it, but you know, I think they're not being fully forthcoming about what will be happening on the ship. Like, cause I know a lot of the on ship amenities and, you know, activities and meals and all that. That's a big part of the experience too, which I think is part of the reason that you and I are both on the same page about, well, if I was going to go somewhere by sea, I would want to get off and, you know, find the local stuff and then just use the ship exclusively for traveling between destinations. But there's, you know, a lot of these cruise ships are basically like an amusement park, you know, on the high seas, right? So there's going to be a lot of changes in the way those on-ship interactions happen too, wouldn't you think?
Yeah. I mean, to answer your first question, I would go on this if they flew me to Singapore for free to go on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be worth it because in my opinion, I would be paying for a flight to Singapore and all the adventure that wonderful country contains by, you know, possibly risking my life on a really nice cruise ship. And that's fine. Like, that's how James Bond travels. You know what I mean? He doesn't ever pay for tickets on stuff. He just has to go somewhere and risk his life. So in a way, I would be like fiction's most terrible spy. And James Bond's a terrible spy.
Yeah, I sort of answered my own question, too, as far as like, what, are they asking for volunteers for this or whatever? Like, no, Not at all. In fact, the airline in question, I think we were talking about, was Qanta. And those were 7-hour flights that just, you know, departed and then turned back around. And those sold out in just 10 minutes. That being said, I don't know how many exactly there were. And I can't imagine they're doing a ton of these destinationless cruises as well. But there must be a contingent of folks that are really itching to get out and, you know, see the skies, the friendly skies, or the fair seas, or what have you. I don't know if that's even a thing people say, but I just said it. And in looking into this, there is, you're right, Ben, there is some other news. Not only is the cruise industry taking a bit of a bath in terms of finances, but Royal Caribbean, that was barely on purpose, but I will go with it. Royal Caribbean has canceled nearly all of their remaining cruises for the rest of 2020. So that's a thing. And it's interesting that, wasn't one of these ships a Royal Caribbean ship involved in the Singapore story? If I'm not mistaken here. Let's see. Royal Caribbean's International Quantum of the Seas. So maybe this is them kind of, you know, trying. This is, they're getting in on this too. And I guess this is something that could be applied to, you know, all of these cruise lines. Okay, let's take a quick second and go to a word from our sponsor, and then we'll be back. And we're back with the rest of this strange news. I did find an article from The Points Guy, which is one of those travel, you know, savvy traveler type websites.
Sure.
And the headline is, I just boarded the first cruise ship to sail in the Caribbean since March. This is what the process was like. And describes arriving at the port of Barbados, this gentleman, Gene Sloan, who wrote this article, and then getting to the port of Barbados. And then in order to board the cruise ship, he was in a line, you know, of course, wearing masks and social distance, and then kind of ushered into this medical tent and described it as being face to face with staffers in full contagion gear, masks, goggles, medical gowns, the works, in order to get a COVID-19 test. And he'd already had several just to even get to that point. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine who is just visiting, actually, when he returns back to Brooklyn, New York, where he is from, he is required by the regulations put in place in that city to self-quarantine for 2 weeks, you know, on the honor system, because he's traveled outside of these defined borders of the city.
And it can't really, be enforced there in the U.S. I'd be curious to see if your pal, the Points Guy, was required to have a contact tracing app on his devices. That's what happened in Singapore. And, you know, the contact tracing app is weird because I'm someone who is diplomatically put skeptical about the excuses that institutional opportunists use to erode personal privacy or increase surveillance. But contact tracing seems like a smart thing because we've seen it work in other countries like South Korea or Israel. And now this is a $1 billion industry, the cruise industry. So we know that countries that weren't very successful at addressing the pandemic early on, or still aren't super successful at it, like the U.S., they're losing billions of dollars, not just the cruise lines. The U.S. economy is losing billions of dollars, and various government agencies are aware of this. Like, I don't know if you saw this, but I mentioned how the CDC issued those phased reopening policies for cruise ships. What I didn't tell you is the funniest part. This was about a week ago. The CDC specifically said cruise ships can set sail again just without passengers. It kind of defeats the purpose, right?
Yeah, a little bit. In terms of like what these new regulations might look like, before a vaccine or whatever, I guess your guess is as good as mine. But in this particular situation, that is kind of heralded, like the Points Guy said, he described this as a watershed moment for the cruise industry, which had been eyeing to restart in the Caribbean for many months. But as we saw, that is not, doesn't seem to be the case going forward. But it's interesting the kind of protocols that this has started to put in place and perhaps will become codified. He says he was subjected to a battery of tests tests, including pulse oxidation test, and also, you know, required to submit quite a bit of medical documentation from his own, you know, GP, I imagine.
And where he had, traveled, if at all, in the days leading up to that, I bet.
That's right, yep.
Especially probably in the last 3 weeks, maybe. Have you ever tested positive for COVID-19? It's a scary thing. I do have to note, though, having not traveled officially to Singapore, it's a very crowded, dense place. You know, I've got some friends who lived and live there now, and in addition to being pretty expensive compared to a lot of other places in the world, privacy is kind of at a premium. Open space is for sure at a premium. So maybe just the idea of going through all this rigmarole, just to stand on the deck of a ship and be able to look out into the wide open spaces of the world, maybe that's worth it for some people. I could definitely feel that. I mean, I've just gone on road trips, you know, where I've just said, okay, I'm gonna drive literally till I hit the ocean, and then I'll drive back.
There you go. No, I mean, wanderlust typically, you know, I mean, it just refers to wandering and moving around and just kind of getting out of your comfort zone. There was another stage of testing that I didn't even realize until we were talking. I kind of like breezed past it. But a second round of testing, once you actually got on the ship in order to get checked into your cabin, he described it as after the initial check-in station, he was directed to an isolated outdoor seating area isolated by party, and then was called up to another medical screening desk where he was had his temperature taken, had his blood oxidation levels taken with like a fingertip device, and then also he had to fill out another round of paperwork of medical forms, exactly to your point, Ben, about where he traveled and all of that stuff again, so a second time. And then he passed with a you know, appropriate temperature and everything checked out. Blood oxygen was 98%. And then he had to sit in the isolated area again. And then he had to take another COVID test. You have to test negative for COVID-19 at least twice before being allowed to board.
And then if you leave for any port of call, you probably have to test again. So basically, they're doing the never-ending story three trials to get on the boat. It's like when Atreyu has to go through those different gates.
Yeah, and the Swamps of Sadness and all that too. different part of the movie, but I still think of that as that was testing his fortitude because he lost his beloved horse. But I maybe misspoke earlier when I said this test was only to check in. The previous test was even before getting on the boat, and then you get onto like a gangplank situation, I imagine, where this is, and after that you're taking this other round of tests before actually getting on the boat. But you do have to pass the rapid test twice before getting on. So
there's several. Yeah. Okay, so there's several. I think again the three. What is it? The Great Riddle Gate, the Magic Mirror Gate, the No Key Gate. I think those are it. And Neverending Story may not hold up for everyone. You know, it may seem dated, but I think it's an impactful tangent. The big question that I have when I hear this stuff, first off, shout out to everybody who is tuned into the show today, who's worked on a cruise ship or is involved with the industry. We know times are tough and wish you the best. But my immediate question is there enough financial juice here for someone to conspire to try to rig the game? You know what I mean? Like if there was a positive test, or if there was somehow an outbreak, would the cruise lines, one, be capable of covering it up, and two, would they attempt to? I don't know the answer.
I would hope not. I would hope not after all of the bad press that they got so early on. Not that they, I don't necessarily think they were trying to cover it up, but it was not enough was known about it. They just didn't quite know how to respond. And that's not entirely, you know, an act of negligence. But I would really, truly think that with everything that we've been through as a country and everything that business has been through, that no one would try to cover it up, because it's then you're just going to get pilloried, you know, mm-hmm. and then you're really done.
Yeah, because the cruise industry themselves had suspended, voluntarily, at least in the U.S., suspended cruises until 2021 after the CDC replaced their total lockdown, their no sail order, with what they were calling the conditional sailing order, which is still the boats can move, but no passengers. So hopefully we can get the conspiracy cruise on the high seas one day, get one that day. Open water. Yeah.
There was one more little step I wanted to add, just because it's interesting and it involves a cool gadget that I've never seen before. Once he's passed these two tests and tested negative on these two COVID tests, only then is he actually allowed on the ship. So like I said, the second test was on the pier, and then, okay, you pass, you go up. And then the last step before getting on is to have your luggage entirely sprayed down by what looks like a something somewhere between a dust buster and like a super soaker. There's a employee wearing, you know, surgical gloves and a mask holding this thing. It's like green and white plastic, and it sprays a big, you know, like if you turn the nozzle on a container of Clorox, you know, the way where it causes like the wide spray or whatever. It looks like that. But that's it. I guess after all that, he's on the ship and presumably having a wonderful time. But I don't know. It seems like a lot. But there is a silver lining. You know, when, all of this rigor does allow a situation where I would think the 50% capacity ship is comfortable not wearing masks, because masks are, in fact, not required on board, even among the staff. So you have gone through this kind of ordeal to get on, but then you can sort of trick yourself into thinking that you're in a normal cruise situation and that everything's cool. So that's, I guess, positive. I could see, now that I'm seeing that side of it, I could see it feeling worth it. Now, to escape the weird reality that is going to the grocery store and everyone wearing masks and all of the signs on the highway saying, you know, remain indoors. You know, this is the kind of weird sci-fi world that we found ourselves in that our brains have kind of normalized. Actually, the more I'm thinking about it, this sounds kind of heavenly. Maybe I'll sign up.
Have you been on this cruise? Do you live in Singapore? Do you understand what we're talking about with that dense population and the need for open spaces? I would almost call, you know, sometimes just the press of people can become what I would call socially claustrophobic, if yeah. not physically. We're going to pause for word from our sponsor, and we'll return with a cryptid story. Ah, cryptids. This is the classic stuff they don't want you to know, kind of things that we missed. I know I've done, I did a story previously about animals. Actually, I have a habit of doing stories about weird animals, but this one's pretty neat. So I travel to Virginia in the United States. Virginia, like the area of West Virginia, have been home to all kinds of cryptids in the past, the most famous of which probably is Mothman, which Noel, you and I saw on a tribulation-filled road trip for Car Stuff.
And I believe we've all remarked on his quite impressive physique, the statue, that is.
And the Mothman story is something I'd like to cover as more in depth as we go back to more classic stuff than what you know things. But this feels like classic Virginia. Virginia Wildlife and Management Control, which is a local kind of pest control service, started getting these weird calls on their hotline very recently, just several days ago. People were complaining about a strange-looking snake in Midlothian, Virginia, which is just outside of Richmond.
Well, also, Midlothian has almost the air of like some sort of den of monsters or creatures. It sounds like something biblical in a weird way, or like maybe out of Norse mythology.
Oh, yeah. Or Clive Barker's, there's that Clive Barker novel that the film Nightbreed is based on.
Midian, I believe, is
Yeah, Midian's the one I'm talking about. Yeah, Midian, the cemetery that serves as home for monsters. So imagine you see a foot-long snake-like thing. I'm just going to describe this. You can see the picture. It's orange and black with a white stripe running down. It's like, okay, it's mostly orange, and it has a white stripe bordered by a thick black outline running vertically up and down the length of whatever its body is. And at one end, it kind of has what looks like a hammer shape, like a hammerhead shark almost.
What?
Yeah, it's huge. And it looks, for most casual observers, this would look kind of like a sea snake, right? Because we're used to seeing sea snakes with their very colorful, odd arrangements of hues in all the, you know, all the Discovery documentaries, all the David Attenborough stuff. It turns out this snake people were freaking out about is not a snake. And it's also kind of immortal.
Wait.
That's the lead. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm hold on a second. I got to pull up a picture of this thing. Immortal. Okay, Ben, tell us more, please.
So this is not a snake. It is a hammerhead worm. Hammerhead worms are not native to Virginia, which is why all... Dear conspiracy realist in Virginia, that's probably why all of you are going, what? What the hell? I've never seen that. The hammerhead worm, otherwise known as bipallium, is toxic, so it's dangerous. It's terrestrial. It's a flatworm. It lives on land. It is a predator. It is a cannibal. They don't necessarily pose danger to humans, but there's something you would notice in the wild, and they also... Because they are invasive, they may pose an incredible threat to local ecosystems and, you know, the normal, like the good Virginia earthworms. Nobody asked about the Virginia earthworms. They're the real, like, not salt of the earth, worms of the earth.
Do you remember that episode of King of the Hill where somebody tricks Hank into using crack rocks as fishing lures?
I do not.
It's okay. But the best part of it is he really feels strongly about hand digging worms, and he goes, it all starts with a hand dug American worm. And I don't know,
doesn't worms, go to bait shops.
Yeah, exactly. But then he gets led astray and then ultimately ends up buying crack. But that's what happens when you abandon your morals and you go somebody else's way, bad things happen. This is a beautiful looking creature, though, Ben, I have to say. I mean, it really does. You mentioned Clive Barker earlier. It kind of reminds me of something out of like a Clive Barker situation, or maybe like a Tim Burton. But it really does look exactly as you described it, and has that perfect hammerhead shape. What kind of teeth does it have? Like, is it poison just to the touch, or can you get a hammerhead worm bite?
Here's how it works. So these bipallium worms, they eat earthworms, slugs, insects, and each other. Their mouths are also their anuses.
Oh, cool.
They immobilize their prey, and then they extend their pharynx from their body, where they secrete digestive enzymes onto this hapless creature, liquefying it, and then sucking the tissue into its gut using cilia. And then once they've digested this very unlucky thing, then they, kind of like in South Park, where people started pooping out of their mouths, or whatever, it does that. It's a very real version of that. You say they're beautiful. I think they're super creepy, but to answer your question directly, they contain a neurotoxin called tetrodotoxin. That's how they immobilize stuff. You can also find this in pufferfish. That's one of the reasons why it takes a master chef to prepare pufferfish in a non-lethal way.
So I'm wondering, like, is there something about eating and pooping out of your mouth that just promotes good digestion and allows you to live forever? Or is there something else at play here?
Thank you for the setup, Dole. I appreciate that. Yeah. So here's the thing. Flatworms have an astonishing superpower. It's one that's going to be familiar to any longtime listeners. If you've checked out our earlier series on immortality, which there are real versions of immortality, flatworms have something like this. If you cut off pieces of a flatworm, those bits can regrow into complete worms. And some studies have indicated those bits may possess the memories of the original, I'll call it hammerhead worm prime.
What? So how, like, can they know that?
So you could, by mazes.
Wow. Sorry, Ben. I didn't mean to sound incredulous. I'm just picturing some sort of crazy worm mind reading situation. But of course, you can. The basic memory that a worm would have would be something in terms of, like, remembering a path or remembering, you know, an environment of some kind. And that could be tested.
If, yeah. Like, if that. So here's what it is. There was a study published in the Journal of Experimental Biology, which found that decapitated flatworms not only retain memories, but they transfer those memories to their new brains when the brains grow back. And that's amazing. Like, imagine if you cut off your arm or something like that, and then your arm slowly grew back into a new you, conspiracy realist, and this thing also knew the stuff that you knew. It's a grisly superpower. It also feels like it would get really complicated really quickly. You know what I mean? After about the third iteration or so.
Yeah, this is pretty nightmarish on a lot of levels. I have to say that the thing that I found most interesting about this, that after all of that, all of those incredible superpowers, this toxic venom, neurotoxin, the ability to regrow itself and its own brain and its own memories, at the end of the day, it is just as susceptible to the bane of all squishy little wormy creatures, salt, because you can still kill the things just by hitting them with some good old-fashioned sodium chloride.
Yep, or burn it. All the rule, like, I feel like a lot of Inquisition rules were based on slugs.
Pestilence?
Yeah. Just salt it, burn it. You know what I mean? Those are great ideas for grilling steak and great ideas for killing immortal worms. So before we sew this up, I do want to point out a couple of other cool things about them. Each individual has both testes and ovaries. They can also reproduce asexually. Usually worms reproduce by fragmentation. They leave behind a tip of their tail or something stuck on a plant, right? And then that turns into an adult. So this is how, like, if humans could do this, this is how we would reproduce. You know what I mean? Like, you would be with your sweetheart or the love of your life, if you have one, and you'd be like, let's do it, honey. Let's cut off our thumbs and let's, like, stick them over on this tree and then come back and you know, we'll have two little us's.
Well, when you say it like that, Ben, it sounds pretty romantic.
Right. We've all been there. You know what I mean? Like, who was it? Van Gogh cut off his ear, probably in a similar attempt.
There's also, it's a really freaky Bjork film. It's actually when she was married to Matthew Barney, the performance artist or whatever.
Dancer in the Dark?
No, not that one. This is a different one. This is called Drawing Restraint 9, where they use Japanese ceremonial flaying knives to slice the flesh off of each other's bodies until they, like, morph into whales or something.
Again, you know, we've all been there. These hammerhead worms have been invading France as well for nearly 20 years. Virginia just seems to be a new beachhead, a new hammerhead for this species. And at this point, we have to wonder what's going to happen to the natural world as the climate continues to change or evolve. Are we going to see more invasive animals reach into new ecological niches, into new parts of the world as the former rulers of those areas find life increasingly difficult? The answer probably in some way is yes, but the details of how that works out remain to be seen. In the meantime, Virginia, don't eat any hammerhead worms. Lovers of the high seas and cruise ships, let us know if you plan to take a maritime adventure soon. And then also tell us your weirdest animal stories. I think I mentioned this to you off air, Noel. I was so sad. I found this fantastic paper on the theory that octopuses might be the descendant of some sort of extraterrestrial or alien life form. And the paper was pretty interesting, but it was from 2018, so I didn't think it qualified as news.
Yeah, but I still want to read it, and I think listeners probably will too. My favorite part about I was watching John Oliver talking about the election results. Mm-hmm. At the end, he gave everybody 30 seconds to react in whatever way they wished, you know, emote. And he chose to do so by reciting interesting facts about cephalopods. And his favorite one, my favorite too, is that their brains are spread throughout their entire body, which I think is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. And those are arms, not tentacles. Don't be a Philistine.
That's true.
So, yeah, we want to hear from you. We hope you enjoyed today's segment. You can reach us on the internet. We try to be easy to find. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We like to recommend our Facebook page, Here's Where It Gets Crazy, where you can hang out with our favorite part of the show, your fellow listeners.
That's right. You can also join us in our favorite place on the internet, the Here's Where It Gets Crazy Facebook group, where memes are exchanged, friendships are forged, and it's just a good place in general. All you got to do to join is name one of the people that is involved in the show to let us know that you are familiar with the show and you will be in. Also, why not check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/conspiracy stuff, where you can see little polls from every single episode we do every day of the week and share them with your friends. YouTube's really shareable that way. And then, you know, help you tell them about the podcast. On that same tip, please go to iTunes or whatever they call it now, Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review there. We would be most appreciative and help people discover the show.
Yes, massively appreciated. You know, every time you give us a review, a hammerhead worm gets its wings or something of that nature. What if you don't feel like social media? I get it. It's been stressful for a lot of people. And the studies about social media that come out in the next few years are going to be fascinating. If that's the case, go ahead and give us a call directly. We're 1-833-STDWYTK. You've got 3 minutes. Give it to us with both barrels. It could be related to this. It could be related to another topic you'd like us to cover in the future. We want to hear from you. Let us know if we can use your name on air. And if you hate all of that, there's one way you can always contact us. Our good old-fashioned email, where we are.
Conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.